This is the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Now, Air America Radio proudly presents the Tom Hartman Program. Welcome to the No Boring Zone.
Well, the New York Times says presidents do have the power to grant clemency and pardons, but in this case, Mr. Bush did not sound like a leader making tough decisions about justice. He sounded like a man worried about what a former loyalist might say when actually staring into a prison cell. The Washington Post: reducing the prison sentence had to no prison time at all, as Mr. Bush did, to probation and a large fine is not defensible. The Chicago Tribune: Bush sent a terrible message to citizens and to government officials who are expected to serve the public with integrity. The Dallas Morning News: nearly a decade ago, the GOP House impeached President Bill Clinton for lying under oath and obstructing justice in a civil deposition. Yesterday, a Republican president commuted the sentence of former top White House staffer Louis Scooter Libby, who was convicted of the same thing in a criminal investigation. Republicans are known for being tough on crime. Yeah, right. Apparently, there's an exception when the criminal is a member of President Bush's inner circle. And it just continues. The Rocky Mountain News, the Detroit Free Press, Denver Post, New York Daily News, Arizona Republic, San Jose Mercury News. Yeah. On the other hand, you've got Fred Thompson out there going, yeah, this is a good thing. I'm glad this happened. I'm very pleased about this. This, let us not forget. By the way, greetings. Welcome to the program. Tom Hartman here with you. And we will be live tomorrow on the 4th of July. We will be doing a live program. And yesterday you heard a best of program, because yesterday I was in Seattle for an advanced screening, a private advanced screening of Leonardo DiCaprio's new movie, The 11th Hour, which premiered at Cannes last month and will be out in August, next month. And the end of August and September, rolling out in cities all across the United States. And I'm in the movie. In fact, I'm in the beginning, the middle, and the end of the movie, which is kind of cool. And I didn't realize I was as much in the movie as I am. And but whether I was in the movie or not, it's a great movie. It's the appropriate and perfect sequel to Al Gore's An Inconvenient Truth, because it takes from global, it starts with global warming and goes to the next steps. You know, what are all the crises we're facing in the world, and what can be done about them? So anyhow, that's where I was yesterday. I'm back now today live, and as I said, we'll be live also on the 4th of July tomorrow on this program. Let's remember that this entire Scooter Libby scandal started with the outing of Valerie Plame, a covert CIA officer. And Valerie Plame was playing a very real and important role in the U.S. government, and one of her colleagues, Larry Johnson, is with us. He, a former State Department official, a former CIA officer, noquarter.typepad.com is his blog. He's now doing security work. Larry, welcome to the program.
Hey, good afternoon, Tom.
Great to have you with us. Give us just a quick recap of who Valerie Plame was and what she was doing before Scooter Libby and Friends. And I think the Friends is the important part here, got into the act.
Valerie was the chief of operations on the Directorate of Operations side of the house. She was a non-official cover officer, which meant that when she traveled overseas, she did not have the identity of being a U.S. diplomat. She did not get to carry a black passport or have any kind of diplomatic protection. Sometimes she could travel as a U.S. citizen. Sometimes she could travel as a citizen of another country. But she was tasked with finding and locating weapons of mass destruction in Iraq. That was her
now the point
mission.
The point that you just made about her not having a diplomatic passport. To bring that down to the level of reality, what that actually means, practical reality. What that means is that if she was in another country and the intelligence service of that country knew that she was actually a secret CIA officer, that they could arrest her for being a spy, she's not in a military uniform, her status is not proclaimed. They could arrest her for being a spy and execute her.
Right. It is. We used to call it the get-out-of-jail-free card, that if you were picked up overseas and you had a black passport, you were at least entitled to diplomatic protections. And they, you know, it goes back to the good old days of the Cold War when Soviet spies would be picked up or U.S. Intelligence officers picked up overseas, and you know, you'd trade them back and forth. But so,
and that's why so very often the ambassadorial staffs and the you know, the related to the ambassador staffs had these diplomatic passports, even though everybody knew that they were spies, and it was so that they would have a get out of jail free card. But Valerie Plame did not have that. She put her life on the line.
She didn't have that, and she was actually in the process of moving from non-official cover into official cover status, but that still would have meant she would have had no acknowledged relationship with the CIA, and the intent was that she would travel back overseas as a chief of station and be able to continue her career. And when they exposed her identity, it went beyond destroying her career and outing her, but it also disrupted a fairly, you know, I have some knowledge about the nature of the intelligence network that was compromised. And it was significant. It involves multiple people.
Yeah. Now, this is something that you can talk about. We're going to have her husband on at the bottom of the hour, who I'm guessing will not be able to, or perhaps not willing, but probably not be able to talk about the details of what his wife did
Correct.
For a living. And so to the extent that you can share that with us, you know, let us know what kind of damage did Scooter Libby and Dick Cheney and their friends, George W. Bush himself, do to this country?
Look at the non-official cover officers' focus to go after nuclear weapons technology, and to do so in a way that the people that they were contacting had no knowledge that they were dealing with the United States. It really gives you another leg up in getting information. So when her identity was compromised, and when the company that she provided her cover, Brewster Jennings, was compromised, that means that everybody who was associated with, working with, had any contact with that company was now compromised. And so in some of those cases, people realized that they were doing work with the United States, and they backed out. In other cases, it literally put people's lives at risk. And I do not know specifically, I would be shocked that if someone did not lose their life in this.
Right. So here we have a crime that, in all probability, There has not been a thorough investigation for fairly obvious reasons, I guess, because the administration doesn't want to investigate itself.
Right.
But there, or at least its own crimes. But here we have a crime that we know seriously damaged national security, particularly our national security with regard to weapons of mass destruction, probably led to the death of people, certainly led to the destruction of one of the major intelligence gathering operations that was being run by the Central Intelligence Agency. And at the same time that Bush has, you know, gleefully signed the death warrants of several hundred people while he was governor of Texas and never commuted a single one, the guy who was a participant in the outing of this operation, which I would call treason, and I'd like
I would agree with you on that. Yeah, well,
okay.
Look, they didn't get to sign up for the Friends and Family program, you know. Scooter was on the Friends and Family program. This administration has been the most corrupt, perhaps since Warren G. Harding, in terms of the amount of nepotism that goes on, insider trading. I mean, whether we're talking Halliburton and Dick Cheney, whether we're talking Dick Cheney's daughter going over as a senior State Department official, across the board. And yet, these people think that they are above the law in all things. Whether it's Dick Cheney saying he's not even a member of the executive branch, he's a member of double secret super probation branch, and
Well, there's the judicial branch, the executive branch, the legislative branch, and the Dick branch. He's the head of the Dick branch. In any case, it's a bad joke, but that's the tragedy of it, is that it's a bad joke. There is some speculation that the reason that this was a commutation rather than a pardon is that because Scooter Libby is now still engaged in a legal and criminal process, he thus has the ability to assert Fifth Amendment rights of protection against prosecution.
Correct.
That he might lose if he was pardoned. Does that make sense to you?
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. And I think what you're going to see is that he will remain in a commuted state until after the November 2008 election, at which point George Bush will then pardon him.
Right.
So...
Yeah. As long as his testimony might be useful or relevant, he'll be kept in a state where he can't testify. This
right.
is really all about Bush and Cheney covering their own backsides.
Yeah, no, I would say so. And this, if nothing else, you know, the bizarre admission yesterday by George Bush, who acknowledges that Scooter is guilty. He is guilty of obstructing justice. He is guilty of perjury. And yet, you know, he just doesn't want him to go to prison.
Yeah, because who knows? He might decide to sing, or maybe he could.
You know, when you point out the obstruction of justice, this brings George Bush into the obstruction of justice category.
That's right. Yeah, there is a criminal conspiracy coming out of the White House. Libby was the lever point, and that lever has been loosened or weakened, shall we say? Larry Johnson, noquarter.typepad.com. Larry, thanks for being with us.
Tom, always a pleasure, man.
Good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you on Air America Radio.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program, the No Boring Zone, on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. Well,
it's the end of. Jeez, how to position? It is the end of the ability of the Bush administration to claim any kind of moral high ground whatsoever. I mean, you know, executing grandmothers, executing Carla Faye Tucker, and then laughing about it, executing mentally retarded children. George W. Bush had no problem with any of that. In fact, he made jokes about it. But a couple of months in prison for Scooter Libby? No, siree, Bob. I'm surprised he didn't go in and commute the sentence of Paris Hilton. By the way, head over to the airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page blog and join in our daily blog and say hi and give us your thoughts on this or any other topic of the day. David Poole, our producer, will pick his favorite mention for the day, and we will send that person an autographed copy of Screwed, the Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It, as soon as we, you know, during the last segment of the show. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Ron, Renton, Washington. Hey, Ron, what's up?
Hey, I think you might answer my question, but since his sentence is commuted, if he's brought before Congress, he can still be brought before Congress on some of these other matters and testify on them, can't he?
I'm not sure, Ron, and that's one of the reasons why I want to get a good, you know, constitutional lawyer on here, John Dean or somebody like that, and ask them that question, because I just don't know. My non-lawyer understanding of it is that if he were pardoned, then he could be dragged before Congress and compelled to testify. By having his sentence commuted, that basically means that the conviction is still in place, or the criminal process is still in place, including the appeals process. And so, you know, his stock answer to basically any question that Congress may be asked would be, I'm sorry, but I'm in the middle of a criminal investigation. I am the subject of a criminal prosecution. And so I invoke my Fifth Amendment right to not say anything that might affect that. I'm quite sure that that's the case. Although, as I said, I'm not the constitutional lawyer, but I think this is a really, really slick move. And Ron, thanks for bringing it up. A really slick move by the Bush administration to make sure that Libby will not speak, cannot speak, does not speak. And, you know, we'll see how this thing plays out. Kelly in Detroit, Michigan. Hey, Kelly, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. How you doing?
Good.
I just have to tell you how much I love you. Your program is just my favorite. I listen to you every day. But I just wanted to let you know that Bush, as far as I've read, he did commute a sentence when he was governor. But Henry Lee Lucas, the notorious serial killer, he changed his death sentence to life in prison.
That's right. That's the only one.
Yes.
And it was...
question that they had crossed paths before with a cult in Texas.
Oh my!
Yeah, surprise, surprise. Huh?
Yeah, don't get me started on sociopathy serial killers here.
Hey, that's okay. I heard about the upside down stars on your show on 6606, and that's I'm dying to call the RNC and ask them about them, but I'm afraid to.
You know, what's really interesting is when I went to hear Karl Rove speak here in Portland, Oregon, the RNC logo was up on the wall behind him, and the stars were right side up. They weren't upside down. And afterwards, I asked I'm not going to out the guy. I asked an official with the local Republican Party, you know, what happened to the stars on the banner there on the RNC logo? Because I thought they were supposed to be upside down. And he said, yeah, but, you know, some of the local folks said that upside down stars are signs of Satan worshipers. And so we flipped them right side up. No authority from headquarters, as it were.
It has to be intentional, don't you think? And I've seen on some of the, like on Fox News sometimes, they'll have the donkey with upside down stars.
Oh, really?
Yeah, well, the donkey, they flip theirs too. You know.
That's interesting. Yeah, well, the Democrats have not flipped their stars upside down. Only the Republicans did. They did it right after George Bush became president. And it's, you know, there are those who are a little concerned about it, a little nervous about it, because, as particularly Republicans, because upside down five-pointed stars, you know, historically have been the province of the Satan worshippers. So, I don't know. Kelly, thanks for the call. Eric in Modesto, California. Hey, Eric, we got about a minute before we got to take a break here. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, Tom? I was just listening to conservative radio this morning, because that's about all I get in Modesto. Mm-hmm. And it's horrible, actually. I have to drive away to get...
Welcome to America.
Decent radio, yeah. Anyways, and they were comparing the Clinton impeachment to the Scooter Libby trial. And they said, oh, it's exactly the same and all this stuff. And I called in to try to talk to them, but of course they didn't take my call.
Yeah.
To say, how can you compare something that's treasonous to something that's like a personal, more personal issue? And they never have a response for that. They just try to, I don't know, just push that under the rug and say that the president is all right all the time. And
yeah, just try to change the subject. And, you know, it's really the tragedy of it, Eric, is that it's my team, your team, is that the Republicans are playing this like, you know, this is just our team. And our team can do no wrong. Rather than talking about the real issues, I mean, what Larry Johnson and I were talking about in the beginning of the hour, and what we'll get into right after this break, the real issues, what kind of harm is really being done to this country by this administration? And that's a topic that is a genuine news topic, and it's not being covered in the mainstream media. 27 minutes past the hour.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Call Tom at 866-303-2270.
So here's the process. By the way, 566 days, 12 hours, 20 minutes, 27 seconds until George W. Bush leaves office voluntarily. And therein lies the rub. Everybody's talking about impeachment. And impeachment is off the table. Impeachment is on the table. Impeachment, where did impeachment go? The only serious impeachment proposal put forward right now is Dennis Kucinich's House Resolution 333 to impeach Dick Cheney. And it ties right in, frankly, to what's going on here. And I believe that they're up to now 11 sponsors. But here's the deal. In Nixon, the United States versus Nixon, back during the Nixon administration, this was when Nixon was saying, no, I'm not going to, he wasn't going to give up the White House tapes. He wasn't going to release those things. He wasn't, you know, he was claiming executive privilege. The Supreme Court ruled unanimously that the president can claim executive privilege except in case of a criminal offense. Actually, Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution says the president, actually, well, this gets back to Scooter Libby. Let me put that on hold for just a second. So anyhow, the president can claim executive privilege except in case of crimes that may have to do with the president. So what we need right now is a special prosecutor. Somebody in Congress needs to put forward a, you know, whatever the process is to begin this, to get a special prosecutor going or a special investigator going, or perhaps Congress to do the investigation, to look into, you know, the low-hanging fruit, obviously, is the White House wiretap, NSA wiretap, illegal wiretap operations. Here's a crime that the president was clearly involved in, he's confessed to. He's bragged about. And it's a crime. It's a federal felony. But I would submit to you that the crime, that this is a great opening for an investigation into the crime of obstruction of justice. Obstruction of justice is one of the charges that Scooter Libby was charged with, and this clearly involves the office of the vice president, and in all probability involves the office of the president. At the very least, Karl Rove, and perhaps even, and probably even, George W. Bush. Scooter Libby, let's keep in mind, was an assistant to George W. Bush and was the number two guy under Karl Rove, or under Dick Cheney. So, if you want to reach the point where you can impeach the president or where you can have some discussion of impeachment, you have to be able to, you know, subpoena the evidence. And if you want to get around the claim of executive privilege, it has to be a criminal basis. Now, here's also why, in my opinion, the president did not have the authority. And this is something that I would love to see Congress take up, some brave member of Congress. And you may want to contact your members of Congress at area code 202-225-3121 and raise this. The president did not have the right to raise this, did not have the right to commute Scooter Libby's sentence. Common sense would indicate that he didn't have the right because this had something to do with him. That there, you know, that the White House was involved in this, that his office and Dick Cheney's office, the executive branch, was involved in this, and therefore he should have basically recused himself, just like a judge who, you know, might otherwise be hearing a case that involves his son-in-law or something, says, you know, I can't hear this case. This involves a family member. I'm recusing myself. Or involves some business interest or whatever. I mean, you know, recusal is a fairly, you know, normal and standard thing. The Article 2, Section 2 of the Constitution that provides the authority to the president to do what George Bush did yesterday with Scooter Libby says, and I quote, "The president shall have the power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment." Now, if Bush was pardoning Libby, and there was actually a congressional investigation into Libby's participation in an impeachable offense, Bush would not have been able to pardon Libby. I, you know, again, I don't know if this can be reverse engineered or not, but now is the time, in my opinion. Now is the time for us to be saying, you know, enough is enough. This is a crime. This is a serious crime. Mark in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Hey, Mark, what's up?
Tom, I wanted to speak to you in connection with, it's more than common sense that Bush may have been involved in the Libby case. We know from the documentary evidence entered at Libby's trial, the handwritten note from Vice President Cheney, not going to sacrifice one staffer for another, when this president, which was crossed out, asked Libby to stick his head into the meat grinder. So there's documentary evidence that the president was involved in this, correct?
Yeah, or at least suggesting that the president was involved in it. Yes,
yeah,
absolutely.
That doesn't seem to get mentioned too much. And then the other aspect I wanted to talk to you about, and by the way, love your show. I read letters to Judge Walton that were submitted on behalf of Louis Libby. Interesting one by Paul Wolfowitz. He refers to Mr. Libby while he was in private practice of law, and that one of his clients that he had taken on a controversial libel case defending someone, lo and behold, that defendant in that case was Richard Armitage. And there's never been any suggestion or talk about this connection between Armitage and Libby insofar as releasing Ms. Plame's name.
That's interesting. And Armitage is the guy who's on the record as having given the name to Robert Novak.
Correct. And if you remember, Novak had said that he attempted to interview Armitage for 3 or 4 years, was rebuffed every time, and then one day, out of the blue, according to Mr. Novak, Armitage consents to an interview, and it's in that interview that he exposes Valerie Plame. And I had just never seen any connection between Armitage and Libby before until I saw it in Mr. Wolfowitz's letter to Judge Walton. And you can see it. It's there on the internet for anyone to look at.
Yeah. So Armitage wasn't just a off on the side, in the State Department. He was he was an old friend of Scooter's, perhaps.
Correct. And I think it was that very same day that Mr. Rove may have exposed Ms. Plame's name to Matt Cooper from Time. So
right.
These did not happen as separate, isolated incidents.
Yeah, this was a coordinated and concerted effort. There's
yeah,
no doubt about it. Mark,
I agree with you. The documentary evidence implicating Bush in this thing should really preclude him from either a commutation or a pardon. That's
right.
The point I wanted to make, Tom. Thank you very much.
You made well, Mark. Thank you very much. And therefore, there should be a criminal investigation into this thing. Beth in Maine. Hey, Beth.
Hi, Tom. It's great to speak to you. I don't have Air America in Maine anymore, but I just wanted to call you and just tell you I called my Republican Senator Collins and Senator Snow, and I asked their assistance if the senator believed in what Dick Cheney says, that he's not part of the executive branch, and they didn't have a comment. They're like, no, she hasn't made a public comment yet. And I was like, well, does she believe it or disbelieve it? They're like, she hasn't made a comment yet. It was just so funny.
I know. It's really tragic. Now, in terms of starting a criminal investigation or starting an impeachment process, the person to call is not your senator. It's your member of the House of Representatives, because those all have to begin in the House.
Process. So it's just I've called my Congressman Tom Allen, and he's like, and they all feel for me. They're like, yeah, things are so bad now, and I've called them for impeachment to support Dennis Kucinich, but every time I called the Republican senators, they're just like very, stoic and so glued to their party.
Well, at least they're taking your calls. What we're hearing from our listeners here in Oregon is that we have one Republican senator in the Pacific Northwest, Gordon Smith, the guy who was involved with Cheney, oddly enough. And actually, Cheney is how he pronounces it. I think it's really weird that Dick Cheney pronounces his name Cheney, and he's very happy that everybody else pronounces it Cheney. It's almost like he has a secret name as well as everything else. But in any case, that Cheney and Rove had both been involved in this massive fish kill up here in Oregon that was designed to help raise money for and get Gordon Smith, the Republican senator, reelected. At least your Republican senators take your calls. You call Gordon Smith's office and you get a recording, or you get hung up on, or nobody answers. So, you're lucky.
But the real Republicans are gone. I mean, Barry Goldwater is rolling in his grave. I mean,
you betcha.
They're all
you
radical betcha. Republicans. It's a really sad time. I hope that we can overcome this. People don't have to protest in the streets. They just call up their their congressmen and senators, and they do listen to us.
Yep. So. Yep. Do it. Yeah. Do it. Give them a call. Beth, thank you very much. Gary in Southern Indiana. Hey, Gary.
Hey, Tom. You was talking earlier about Libby and how they, this was a smart thing because they couldn't get him to testify. But there was an attorney on another show last night that said that Congress could pull him in. They could give him limited immunity and force him to testify.
But that would blow up his criminal case, and that's something that Congress is very wary about doing typically.
Well, yeah, but at the same time, when you're trying to get to the upper levels, he's not so much important as getting to Cheney or Bush.
Yeah, good point, Gary. Good point. Thank you very much. 45 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program right here on Air America Radio. Cheney, Bush, where does the impeachment start? Is Dennis Kucinich right? Start with Cheney. 45 minutes past the hour.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program, where despair is not an option. Get active. This is Air America Radio.
It's getting stranger and stranger by the minute, in fact. Scooter Libby, his sentence commuted but not pardoned. It's interesting that an ongoing criminal investigation, therefore, and an ongoing appeal, therefore, and perhaps the ability to assert Fifth Amendment rights and not testify, therefore, could that be? I mean, is this just a really sophisticated move, or is this sort of a compromise move, or what? And what does this have to do with the national security? What does this have to do with the future and fate of the United States of America? Ambassador Joe Wilson is on the line with us. It was his wife, Valerie Plame, who was outed in this criminal conspiracy, apparently, starting out of the White House that Scooter Libby was part of. Ambassador Wilson, welcome to the program.
Nice to be with you.
Great to have you with us. Thank you very much. I'm curious what your take is, first of all, just on the overall commutation.
Well, I'm certainly not surprised. There's not very much that this administration can do to surprise me anymore. It's corrupt to the core from top to bottom. I think what it does do, however, it just casts a pall over the office of the president, clearly over the office of the vice president, and raises the very real suspicion that this was a quid pro quo. They bought Libby's silence in order to ensure that the cover-up would not be exposed. So it's really just the ongoing obstruction of justice.
Bush had, back, you know, some years ago when this first started coming out, he had said...
And I don't know. We're going to find out. The senior administration official... Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Increasingly, it's looking like that senior official, who really was the leak behind the leak behind the leak, might have been either George Bush or Dick Cheney.
Well, it certainly looks like that. Mr. Fitzgerald, at the conclusion of the trial, said that Libby had lied blatantly and repeatedly, and as a consequence, there remained a cloud over the office of the vice president. I think at a minimum, the president should come clean with the American people about his own involvement, the vice president's involvement. He can begin by releasing his own interviews with the special prosecutor, the vice president's interviews, any other senior White House officials' interviews. And I would go even further, say he should instruct the special counsel to release all the evidence gathered during the course of this investigation so that people can see for themselves, Americans can see for themselves exactly what the cloud is over the office of the vice president that Fitzgerald was talking about.
Yeah, it sounds good, but Ambassador Wilson, you and I both know that George Bush is not going to do that. What could Congress do? I mean, here we have Democratic majorities in the House and Senate. What could Congress do that might actually get done as opposed to, you know, hoping that Bush would do the right thing?
Well, I think Congress has to bring all the plenary power that it has to bear on the administration to get to the truth. Certainly we will continue, Valerie and I will continue in our pursuit of the truth through our civil suit. And I have every expectation that there may well be hearings in Congress, and we will cooperate to the extent possible with those hearings.
If a criminal investigation was launched, it seems like that could be the thing that would, you know, the kryptonite, the thing that could bring this all down, given the U.S. versus Nixon 9-0 Supreme Court judgment that ruled against Richard Nixon, that when a criminal case, a criminal investigation is involved, executive privilege cannot be invoked. So would a criminal investigation into the outing of your wife's operation and her identity, could that originate in the House of Representatives, or would that require a special prosecutor, and if so, or some variation thereof, and if so, would that require action by the House of Representatives, or is there some way to get this done on a smaller scale?
I have no idea. You're better off addressing that to lawyers, but there is a criminal investigation that's ongoing, and so and it has gone into the White House because, of course, Fitzgerald has said there's a cloud over the office of the vice president.
You're talking about Fitzgerald's investigation.
That's right. That was.
I thought that was wrapped up.
That is a criminal investigation, and what he said was that it was wrapped up except the extent to which there was new information that was brought to his attention. What the president, of course, did in commuting Mr. Libby's sentence, he guaranteed that there would be no incentive now for Mr. Libby to tell the truth to the special prosecutor. And as a consequence, the blatant lying, repeated lying, and obstruction of justice stands. He walks, the vice president remains protected in this matter. The cloud remains over his head.
Ambassador Joe Wilson, tell us about your civil suit and what the consequences of this might be if it's successful.
Sure. Well, people can go to www.wilsonsupport.org and read the 73-page complaint that we filed. We have three objectives. One is to get the truth out. None of the people who are involved in the suit or who are the Vice President, Mr. Libby, Mr. Rove, and Mr. Armitage testified in the criminal trial. We think there's a lot that they can say to the American people, and we want to get them under oath. Second, we want to hold to account government officials for the abuse of power, using their public positions to engage in a private political vendetta. And three, we'd like to use the suit as a way of discouraging future generations of public servants from engaging in the same sort of aberrant behavior, because clearly this administration hasn't discouraged it through its actions.
I'm looking at your website. This is wilsonsupport.org is the website. It's an extraordinary collection of information on this from a whole lot of different directions, you know, links to the news and whatnot. Beyond supporting you in the lawsuit itself, is there any way that, you know, any encouragement to members of Congress, for example, or things that our listeners could do to support what's going on?
Well, I remember when Pat Buchanan ran for office a number of years ago, and he said it's time to pick up the pitchforks. And I think it is time for American citizens. Their congresspeople are going to be home for the 4th of July weekend, and they should let their views be known to their representatives. My own experience in Washington over the last several years has been every time Congress returns from recess, they are more and more concerned about the activities of the administration, particularly in foreign policy.
Right. So this is a particularly good time to either get out on the streets, or B, to contact the local offices of your
sure.
members of the House or Senate.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. Joe Wilson, Ambassador Joe Wilson, wilsonsupport.org. You got to check this website out. It's great. Wilsonsupport.org. Joe Wilson, thanks so much for being with us, Ambassador.
Good to be with you. Thanks very much.
Good talking with you. 57 minutes past the hour. It's the Tom Hartman radio program on Air America Radio.
Hartman Program, transforming the world by revitalizing democracy. This is Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. Welcome to the Democracy Zone.
And welcome back. George W. Bush. Well, you know, if you're not with us, then you're against us, you know?
Either with us or against us. You're either evil or you're good.
So, are you evil or are you good? Are you with us or are you against us? Joseph Farah is the author of Stop the Presses, the inside story of the new media revolution. He's the founder of WorldNetDaily.com, conservative news website. WorldNetDaily.com. Joseph, welcome.
I'm good, Tom. How about you?
I'm great.
I'm not evil.
But I'll get better.
Not evil.
Not evil. Okay. Well, here's the question. I asked David to call you guys this morning, get you on the show, because I wanted to get get somebody on who could summarize the perspective of those who are calling, because I don't understand it, who are congratulating the president for commuting this sentence and calling for pardons. It seems to me that this, you know, from a partisan Republican point of view, or from a partisan let's protect Bush and Cheney, you know, the White House point of view, you could defend this. But it seems that from a classic Republican point of view, a Barry Goldwater, Dwight Eisenhower point of view, or even a classic conservative, you know, the rule of law must be respected point of view, which is also, I would submit, a classic liberal point of view, a classic American point of view, this is indefensible.
Well,
how is the defense of this breaking out on your side of the aisle?
Okay, well, let's remember, I'm not a Republican, not now, not ever. I don't, as you know, I don't consider myself a conservative. I don't like that term either. But
what are you?
As an independent-minded person who cares
okay.
about fairness and justice, Bush wimped out on this by only providing a commutation of the jail sentence.
You know, it should have been a pardon, in your opinion.
Yeah, absolutely. Here's a guy who would do no less than, you know, push for comprehensive immigration reform. But when it comes to something as simple as justice for Scooter Libby, he takes a halfway measure.
And okay, so here are you suggesting, Joseph, that Libby did not lie to a grand jury?
No, he may have lied.
Okay, do you think also, that Bill Clinton should have been have, should have had should have been?
Also, he may have also mixed up his facts. It's unclear to me. But I do.
Well, it was
believe,
clear to a jury.
I do.
In fact, believe, it was clear to a jury and to two different federal judges.
Can I ask you a question? Did Sandy Berger not only lie, but did he commit an incredible offense where he was stuffing highly classified documents at the National Archives into his underwear and socks and making off with them and then lie about that and finally gets a slap on the wrist? We have a notion in this country called equality of justice. And, you know, how can we look at these two examples of high officials obviously doing something wrong and equate them? And I'm sure
Joseph,
you,
I am boggled by
Tom,
this.
Were you
first of all,
Sandy Berger sentence?
First of all, Sandy Berger, you know, he took copies of things that were prep notes for testimony he was going to give.
You don't know that.
That's what
no
he was
evidence.
Convicted of. And no he was convicted and he served this. You know, first of all, we're not talking about Sandy Berger.
Why not?
We're talking about a criminal conspiracy in the White House.
I heard Dick Durbin
House.
Bring Paris Hilton into this.
We're talking about a
today.
Criminal conspiracy in the White House, and I just you know
what's the criminal conspiracy? Let's talk about that if that's what you want to talk about. What's the criminal? Did Scooter Libby leak Valerie Plame's identity?
Well, here's the deal.
Did he
somebody
or not?
Did, as George
we
W. Bush said.
I don't know.
We know
we're
who
gonna
did.
Find out.
Why don't we throw Richard
the senior administration official. Now, this is a large administration, and there's a lot of senior officials. I don't have any idea.
Now, on the other hand, Bush also said that you know this is a really serious thing.
This is a town of where a lot of people leak, and I've constantly expressed my displeasure with leaks, particularly leaks of classified information, and I want to know. I want to know the truth. I want to see to it that the truth prevails.
Now, if he wants to see to it that the truth prevails and the justice is served, shouldn't the rest of us? Shouldn't we?
Yeah.
Shouldn't we
well,
want to know who were the rest of the people involved in this criminal conspiracy?
Tom, let's put the guy in jail who admits leaking Valerie Plame's identity. Let's put Richard Armitage in jail. Would you be in favor of that? He has admitted that he was the source of the leak.
And I don't disagree with you that there should be a serious investigation of why the leak, how the leak, you know, the Armitage and others. I mean, according to the prosecutor, according to Patrick Fitzgerald, this leads all the way to the office of the vice president.
So why didn't he prosecute Armitage?
Well, that's a very good question, and you'd have to ask him that. But what you do have here is somebody who was involved in the cover-up of the crime, and probably in the crime itself, who was convicted by a jury, and two different federal judges upheld the conviction. And you think it's just fine that the president should have pardoned him? I don't get it.
Well, I don't get it.
Pardon him why?
I'm not at all convinced that he was in any way deliberately involved in a cover-up of the crime.
But it's not your conviction that matters. It's the conviction of the court. There are three different courts that found this guy guilty of a crime. And you're saying
but
that
Tom,
he should be
what,
pardoned.
The kind of society that you want is when let's just say you're right. Let's say he lied. Okay, let's take a worst-case scenario. He lied. He lied to a government official. Tom, is the kind
he
of
He lied
society,
about a crime that may have led to the death of people.
Wait a second. Is
We're
the
not
death
talking
of
about
people.
A,
Wait a
the
minute.
The death of people.
You think that the Valerie Plame leak resulted in the death of people?
Yes, there's actually considerable evidence that it did. First of all, it led directly to the war in Iraq. You've got
this was
the basis of the invasion of in Iraq. This had the faulty intelligence. It wasn't even faulty intelligence. It had the
what
lies of this administration.
What does Valerie Plame's identity have to do with faulty intelligence?
They were trying to punish her husband for telling the truth about what was going on. A.
Let's
B.
Say you're
she
right.
was the chairman.
Let's say
well,
you're
let
right.
me finish
Let's
my sentence here, Joe. She was the head of Brewster Jennings, which was an off the shelf CIA operation that was doing counterterrorism intelligence work around the world. It was a phony operation that was dealing with terrorists, particularly with Iran and Iraq. And that program got brought down. When that program got brought down, I mean, we had one of our colleagues on this program an hour ago. When that program got brought down, CIA officers around the world and people, CIA agents, people who were associated with the CIA program with Brewster Jennings, when that name was publicized, in all probability, People died. You're talking about bringing down a major multinational CIA front company
that now no longer exists.
Then
by all means, we need to put Richard Armitage behind bars. If what you say is right, why aren't you worried
about... But Armitage wasn't the guy who started it.
Away with this, and you're more
worried I've already
about
told you, I'm not opposed to that.
Scooter Libby didn't do it. Richard Armitage did. Why are we so focused on Scooter Libby?
Because he was part of the cover up of the conspiracy. What we have here is a criminal conspiracy in
the
White House. If the perpetrator was yes, let's do that. And there's a considerable amount of evidence that indicates that the perpetrator was either George W. Bush, Karl Rove, or Dick Cheney. It originated with one of these three. You have the handwritten memo that Patrick Fitzgerald found that is introduced in open testimony in court, wherein Dick Cheney wrote on that New York Times memo, you know, that the president. It was the president's suggestion that Scooter should initiate this process of outing Joe Wilson's wife.
Well,
I mean, that's part of the public record. Why are you not calling for an investigation or prosecution of the president of the United States for this?
I don't believe a premise.
You don't believe
Dick
Cheney's own notes.
That people died as a result of this. No, I don't. I've never seen any evidence of that whatsoever. To me, this is a tempest in a teapot. I mean,
none of our troops died in Iraq.
Well, yes, but the war in Iraq, the decision over the war in Iraq had little or nothing to do with Valerie Plame's identity.
It had everything to do with it. The war in Iraq was sold by our media, and our media was being intimidated into going along with this whole thing, and this was part of the process.
Okay,
anybody who speaks out, you get nailed. And if we don't nail you, we nail your wife.
Do you want to live in the kind of society where when you lie to a government official, you go to jail? Because if you do, I'm surprised that you didn't, you know, want to see Bill Clinton impeached for perjury. He was under.
This isn't about Bill Clinton. This is about a criminal conspiracy in the White House.
You have these incredible double standards. I don't understand. A sitting president lies.
I am not arguing one way or another about Bill Clinton. I'm telling you that there is a criminal conspiracy in the White House, and I'm just astounded that people who call themselves
if you prove the criminal conspiracy, Tom, I'll be right there with you. Nobody would rather see George Bush come to justice than I would.
You are familiar with Dick Cheney's handwritten note on the edge of the New York Times article.
I'm as familiar with this case as anybody. But you're seeing.
And you think that was just his hallucinating or something?
Tom, it's always good to mix it up with you,
Joseph Farah. The author of Stop the Presses, the inside story of the new media revolution, and founder of WorldNetDaily.com. Thanks, Joseph.
You bet.
16 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program, where smart people get their news. This is Air America Radio.
Save us from hypocrisy. Save us from the lies. Save our homes from foreclosing, stop treating us as spies. Save our jobs from leaving, bring back made in USA. Represent the ones who made you, not the ones who pave your way.
Hey, head over to airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page and join our blog. And you can participate in what's going on, or you want to drop by our live chat room. Again, go to hairamerica.com/Tom Hartman page or tomhartman.com. Click live chat. It'll drop you in there. Also, our message boards over at tomhartman.org. So there's a whole lot of content all over the place. 21 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The big story, obviously, of the day, George W. Bush has decided to, and did yesterday afternoon, commute, not pardon. So Scooter Libby still can claim that if he were to speak about this, it might harm him. He can still invoke his Fifth Amendment rights. Commute, not pardon, Scooter Libby's sentence of the far right saying, well, this wasn't enough, we want a complete pardon. The rest of America, the majority of Americans saying, Scooter Libby, is he Paris Hilton's houseboy? The majority of Americans clueless. Thanks so much to our mainstream media. Of course, everybody knows who Paris Hilton is. And the majority of patriotic Americans going, hey, wait a minute. There's something, you know, fundamentally wrong about this. There's just something fundamentally wrong. Notice how carefully Bush was parsing his words back before it came out that his office was involved in this thing.
I'd like to know somebody in my White House did leak sensitive information. As you know, I've been outspoken on leaks. Whether they happen in the White House or happen in the administration or happen on Capitol Hill, they can be very damaging. And so this investigation is ongoing and by professionals who do this for a living, and I hope they like to know.
I hope they like to. You notice he ahs a lot when he lies. Randy White pointed this out to me a few minutes ago. Anyhow, 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. And Paul in Round Mountain, California. Hey, Paul, what's up?
Hey, I on this plane deal, something's been bothering me, and I want to ask you. The right side of the ledger has all these excuses, but Libby testified in March 5th and 24th before the grand jury in 2004. And he was first contacted by the FBI, I think, in January. Now, if he had told the truth, George Bush would not have been reelected.
Because if he had told the truth, it would have become known that the Bush administration, that at the very least, either Bush, Rove, or Cheney was involved in the outing of a CIA officer's identity in order to punish her husband for telling the truth about what was going on with regard to the intelligence of around Iraq.
Exactly, and nobody mentions that. And when you look back at the Ken Starr investigation, they suspected leaks every week about what was reported to the what the FBI found out. So they were very afraid that this would come out.
Yeah. So the initial testimony, Libby's initial testimony, was in 2003.
No, it was in March of 2004.
March of 2004. Oh, yeah, exactly. Okay, I'm sorry. I had my years wrong. You're right, because the election was November of 2004. So, yeah, so it would have been in that year leading up. That's a good point. You know, I hadn't considered that, and that's a very good point, Paul. Thank you very much for sharing that with us. You have enlightened our listeners as well as myself. John in New Jersey. Hey, John.
Oh, thank you. Thanks for taking my call, Tom. I've been listening to your program, and I just want to say that in addition to the fact that personally I'm disappointed in the fact that this decision came down from the White House, I'm really even more disappointed with the fact that the Constitution allows any elected official to act like a little king and make these kind of decisions. I think that's a flaw in our Constitution, which should have been changed a long time ago. But beyond that, I just want to speak to a point that I feel I'm not excusing any president from any party as far as my comment goes. And I'd like to say that to your previous speaker who wrote the book about Stop the Presses,
right.
If he wants to...
Joseph Thurow.
Hello?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'd submit to him that if he wants to make a point about... fairness or you can't have it both ways or double standard. The double standard here is that if any common American person did this act, they would have been in prison a long time ago. But because George Bush and his administration have a lot of money and a lot of lawyers, they get away with it. This shows to not only to Americans but to the rest of the world that our justice system is corrupt and is not balanced, and it sends a very bad message out to the rest of the world and completely takes away any basis upon which the American government or American nation can speak to anyone else's justice system or system of government.
Yeah. Good point, John. It diminishes our legitimacy. It diminishes our image around the world. Not the fact that if you're African American, and you're arrested, you're far more likely to go to jail in the United States than if you're white, and everybody in the world knows that. I mean, yes, we have two systems of justice in this country, one for the poor and one for the very rich.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Want to fight for curious George Bush and his friends. Sold us this war till they get those oil fields. They're gonna sell us some more. Well, Katrina came, Katrina went,
money we need has all been spent. New Orleans and Baghdad, it's all the same. And the contracts are written in Halliburton's name. It's the same old blues, Republican blues.
Well, in fact, that's what Tony Snow is saying. He's saying this is just routine. This is just, he says, the president spent weeks and weeks consulting with senior members of this White House about the proper way to proceed, and I think it handled it. It handled it, well, I guess the White House, in a routine manner, in a sense that the president took a careful look. It's just routine. According to the New York Times, the decision, quote, seemed to catch Justice Department officials and even some of Mr. Bush's closest aides off guard. They were floored. Okay, now, Putin was there. Vladimir Putin. Maybe he made Bush do it. There's a conspiracy theory for you. Who's really running America? Is it Vladimir Putin? Did he say, hey, you know, I got this deal with Cheney on the side. Cheney's really the fifth column, you've got to protect this guy because he's really, we're really the ones calling the shots now, you know. And so you've got to protect Cheney by pardoning his right-hand man, Mr. Scooter Libby. He does have a cute name, and he does smile nicely, so it'll be easy. It's sort of like Paris Hilton, you know. Everybody will like him. It's not like he looks like Dick Cheney. Christine in Poconos, Pennsylvania. Hey, Christine, welcome to the program.
Hi. I want to tell you I love your program. First of all, I have to say that the whole daddy hosting a play date was ridiculous between Putin and Bush. But I have to address the guy who commented on the double standard. It's not really a double standard. Clinton's lie was a personal lie. He did what any man would do. Honey, did you cheat on me? No, I didn't. It was extremely human. Was it presidential? No. But it was human. What these men have done is they did not just out Valerie Plame. They outed everyone at Brewster Jennings. Everyone. And the Bush declared that outing a covert operative was an act of treason. These guys, if they're like insolent children, if they don't like the rules, they break them, and that's that.
Right, and the rest of us can just, go shopping.
It's amazing to me. I find it amazing because there's such a litany. I mean, if you went down the list of the greatest hits of their, you know, criminal and, you know, just corrupt behavior, it's unbelievable. And I don't think any of them have ever read the Constitution or the Federalist Papers. I mean,
yeah.
Declaring yourself not a member of the executive branch.
I know. It's truly mind-boggling. Christine, thank you. Your point is well made and well taken. Ralph in Colorado Springs, Colorado, and thanks for listening to WPTT. Ralph listening on KKZN. Hey, Ralph.
Hi, Tom. Before I make my point, real quickie with regard to what the author said with regard to Richard Armitage.
Yeah.
What we don't remember is that in the article that Novak wrote in October to the second article, his mea culpa,
mm-hmm.
What he said was that he did not publish until after he had had a second source. That source confirmed two things, I believe. One is that Plame's identity was secret, and that she was connected. And I think what that Novak column in October, somebody should take a look at it, also says, is the implication is that whoever that second source was that he consulted said it's okay to out her.
Hmm. And see, this is another reason why all the information that Patrick Fitzgerald has gathered, including, as Joe Wilson suggested, including the testimony of Cheney and Bush, should be made public.
Absolutely.
Or at least hand it over to Congress, you know, to a congressional committee. Maybe John Conyers can get his hands on it or something like that.
Tom, there's something here that's even worse than politics.
And that is?
That's basically that George Bush is a terrorist. Remember right after 9/11, Bush was running around and saying, anyone who helps a terrorist is a terrorist?
Right.
You had Larry Johnson on this morning, outing Valerie Plame, helped Al-Qaeda. Okay, now for anyone who is still spying for the United States, by letting Scooter off the hook, they know, all of our new spies know, that they are now targets. because the United States under George Bush is not going to prosecute anybody that whacks them.
Well, let me qualify that. They know that they are targets if they take on the Bush family.
If they say the truth. Excuse me. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's not even saying the truth. If they say the truth in a way that harms or embarrasses the Bush family, or it's, you know, it's consiglieres, or it's a, it's, I mean, this is basically an organized crime or operation here that's being run out of the White House. And I say that literally. I mean, here we have criminal acts and there's a criminal conspiracy. And anybody who says anything about that, working for the CIA, as you point out correctly, knows now that they would, that their identity will be destroyed, their lives will be destroyed, and I sure wish the Wilsons the very best. Wilsonsupport.org, by the way, the website for Joe Wilson's efforts, and Joe and Valerie, Joe Wilson and Valerie Plame are not billionaires or multimillionaires or whatever, and this is a major drain on their efforts and or on their resources and something that really, frankly, might be the only way that any of this stuff is going to see the light of day. I think we should be supporting them. Ralph, thanks for the point. Well made. Terrorism. Welcome to it. Welcome to the brave new world. Nick in Charlestown, West Virginia. Hey, Nick, what's up?
How you doing, Tom? I want to try to put a little bit of a silver lining on this horrible dark cloud that befalls our Constitution. I think that Bush did this as an act of sheer desperation, and that's a good thing because it became clear to Bush and those around him that Libby was not about to, take one for the Gipper and do his time in silence. Would you agree with that?
Well, sort of. Michael Abramowitz, writing for the Los Angeles Times and the Washington Post, did an analysis which appeared in our local newspaper, The Oregonian, here in Portland. And it says, in part, one senior administration official said Bush made his decision quickly Monday after hearing that the U.S. Court of Appeals had refused to keep Libby out of jail. Yep. This source, who asked for anonymity to talk freely about the president's thinking, said that there, quote, is comfort at the White House, that the decision will not hurt him politically despite the Democratic outcry. An unanswered question Monday night was Vice President Dick Cheney's role in advocating for leniency for his former chief of staff. But
yeah,
that, I find that particularly bizarre, that there's comfort in the White House that this is not going to hurt him politically.
He's down to
30% popularity. That's his hardcore base. Those are the people who watch Fox News and take psychedelics, drink the Kool-Aid. And this is actually probably going to help him with those folks.
Let me tell you why it will hurt him politically. And here's how Democrats have to do it. It's really obvious and simple, but I'm going to have to say it because a lot of things that are obvious and simple, they haven't gotten yet. And that is to hang this particular decision of the president around the neck of every politician, Democrat or Republican, mostly Republican, obviously, that's going to run from anything from dog catcher to president in the next.
But see, you have the Republicans already running away from it. This is 2 years ago. I predicted that in the 2008 election, you will see Republicans running against George Bush instead of with him. For example, here in Oregon, Gordon Smith, our only Republican senator, one of two Republican federal elected officials. We've got one member of Congress who's a Republican as well. This morning, he comes out and puts his news bite, which is being played on all the local news stations, saying that he doesn't agree with Bush's decision. So here you have Republicans already coming out and saying, no, I don't agree with it.
Which of the people running for president in the Republican ticket have disagreed with it? I mean, Giuliani is for it. Thompson is for it. Who's disagreed with Bush on this?
But see, the point is that is 500 days away. I mean, that's the general election is a long way away. And these guys are pandering to the base, to the Republican base. They're going to say what is going to get them nominated for the presidential election. And then they will be very successful in changing the topic. People just don't remember. You know, a year and a half is an eternity in politics.
I think you're wrong on this one, and let me tell you why.
I hope
American
you're right.
People are not as stupid as the Bush administration seems to think. This is something that is so clear-cut, so outrageous, that the more light that is shed on it, the more angry people will get. This is clear-cut, overt. This is the kind of thing you see in The Sopranos. This is so obvious. And the more light is shed on the underlying dynamic of the Valerie Plame thing, of Iraq, of Joe Wilson, it just goes back and it eats away at all of his underlying lies. This is why Democrats have to take this particular commutation and hang on to it like a dog with a bone, and do with it what the Republicans would do if they were, if the situation were reversed. The Republicans would not let go of this bone. They'd keep on digging and gnawing.
No, you're absolutely right, Nick. And you know, from your lips to God's ears, you said it very well. And let's hope that the Democrats take it and run with it. Dave in San Mateo, California. Hey, Dave, about a minute before we've got to take a break. What's up?
Yeah, real quickly, I just wanted to dispute what your guest said about it not being a crime to lie. Hollywood did was lie to federal investigators, and that's exactly why Martha Stewart went to jail, not for insider trading, but for lying to a federal prosecutor.
Yeah, among others. I mean, you know, she was one of many. This was a crime. Good point. This was a crime. It was a serious crime. But I'm frankly more concerned about the larger conspiracy. That's what I think George Bush is trying to prevent, is he's trying to prevent Scooter Libby from looking at the inside of a jail cell and saying, you know, I could get out of here if I just ratted out my buddies. And that's the last thing that Bush wants, because Bush is in this thing up to his eyeballs. Bush and Cheney, and now that we know from this Washington Post series that Cheney's actually the guy who's running the United States these days and has been for the last 6 years, that Bush and Cheney are up to their eyeballs in bringing down a CIA operation in order to promote lies that led us to war. 45 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Viagra for your brain. On Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
Certainly true for Scooter. He's free! 9.5 minutes before the hour. Ellen Ratner with the Talk Radio News Service in Washington, D.C. Talk Radio News on the line with us. Hey, Ellen.
Hi, Tom. How are you?
I am great. David said you had some news about Laura Bush.
Well, actually, I don't generally report news that's been on other people's airwaves, but CNN actually did an interview with the First Lady, and she said, when you live in countries where 16% of people who are HIV positive, that's a huge percentage of the population, then abstinence absolutely has to be a part of it, because that's 100% safe. But she said that men wear condoms, and every girl or woman can get their partner to do that. I'm not saying condoms aren't absolutely essential. They are, and it's very, very important. I mean, that's a shock.
Well, it's also not policy. I mean, it's just like,
I think you get her to Africa, and she starts saying what she really views. As you recall, Barbara Bush was very, very much, didn't she put a candle in the window at the White House during a pro-choice march or something?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a long history of first ladies speaking out with some integrity occasionally on an issue. Unfortunately, it doesn't usually translate into a policy change on the part of the White House.
Absolutely not, particularly because, as you know, if there's any abortion in any of these family planning clinics in Africa, they get their money cut off.
Well, it's not just abortion. If there's even a discussion of abortion.
That's right.
If there's even a mention of abortion as a possibility. And in some cases, there have even been cases of programs around the world where they've had their U.S. federal funding pulled, not because they mentioned abortion, but because they mentioned birth control as opposed to disease prevention.
Right, and if they really promote birth control in that kind of way that the administration doesn't like. Speaking of the administration, the president today visited wounded soldiers. He gave a Q&A, of course, he sort of thought, I guess, he was going to be asked about wounded soldiers. And, in fact, he was only asked two questions about Louis Libby, Scooter Libby, before he stopped the press conference. And he essentially said he ruled nothing out, which, you know, he will do sort of what Clinton did. As we were sitting there waiting for the inauguration of Bush to begin, Clinton announced the pardons. And I think that's exactly what's going to happen with Scooter Libby.
Yeah, Bush will pardon him on the way out. And between now and then, he doesn't have to serve any jail time. And he's sitting on a $5 million defense fund. He's been well taken care of. And
he
Fred
has been
Thompson,
very well taken care of, and I think he'll be given a job by the party's powers that be. Now, you know, I've been one of these people that actually thinks that this was a ridiculous case and that I'm sure every liberal in the world is going to be furious with me. I think he should have been pardoned. But... And I don't even mean commuted, I mean pardon. But I'm furious with the fact that either, depending on which numbers you look at, 142 or 152 people were murdered in the Texas death penalty, including Carla Faye Tucker, and he showed no mercy, no nothing.
Yeah. Well, there's a huge element of hypocrisy here on the part of Bush, but we have substantial evidence, and, you know, Patrick Fitzgerald finding it, for example, the handwritten note from Dick Cheney on the margin of the New York Times article by Joe Wilson saying that, you know, he doesn't want to see somebody go down because Scooter went to the mat. I forget the exact language, went to the mat for this president. And then Cheney strikes out this president, but it's still there and it's still obvious that he wrote it. I mean, you know, there's a clear conspiracy, at least going to Cheney's office and probably all the way to Bush's office. And why should that not be pursued?
Well, absolutely should be pursued. And, you know, Tom, I said in Oregon this morning that I was a person that just thought impeachment should be off the table because I thought it was going to ruin elections. At this point, with these kind of documents going on, I don't see, if the White House continues its stance, but that Congress has any other option.
Well, then if Scooter Libby, if he was the lever point, if he's the guy that if he goes to jail and he talks, he could bring down this criminal conspiracy inside the White House, then why on God's earth would you want to pardon him?
Well, because you can still pull him before Congress, and he still has to say the truth or oath, and I don't think Libby is going to make this mistake twice, frankly.
Yeah, but do you think Martha Stewart, who also went to jail for lying before a grand jury, should have been pardoned?
Well, you know, again, I'm soft on crime on this one, and I honestly think as I understand,
you're just soft on all crime.
I am, but you know, I honestly don't. I think he had no real motivation. I know you disagree with me to lie to the grand jury. I just truly, maybe I'm naive. I truly believe he didn't remember, because otherwise he could have pleaded the fifth. He could have said I don't remember. He could have said a bunch of stuff. But
you can't plead the fifth before a grand jury.
I do think that they will pull him before Congress, and I think he's not stupid enough, if he did lie the first time, to lie twice.
But doesn't the commutation mean that because he there still is this criminal process in place, that he can use that as an excuse not to testify before Congress?
I think on a whole different issue, you can't. All he could do is plead the fifth. But I don't think that on a whole second issue that has nothing to do with Valerie Plame, that may have to do with the FISA court, that he can pull that. I'm not a lawyer, but I'd be very surprised if he could lie to Congress.
Yeah, well, that's the FISA court. I mean, that's another crime that the
Bush
administration...
But that's the issue that I think they're going to get. This is the issue that I think the Bush administration is very vulnerable, holding those papers and what that means.
Right, because here is a clear law, a clear violation of that law, and in fact, Bush even bragging about it.
That's, in my view, what they're most vulnerable on.
Yeah. Ellen Radner with the Talk Radio News Service, talkradionews.com. Thanks, Ellen. Good talking with you.
Thank you.
57 minutes past the hour.
Exposing the con in conservative. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio, where smart people get their news.
Well, it's amazing the spin that's being put on this. What's amazing to me is that William Crystal continues to get, you know, that these extremist right-wing cranks continue to get press time on major national television programs. William Crystal over on NBC's Today Show. I mean, how does he even get on there? This guy is so far out of the mainstream. He is so far to the Reich. I mean, advocating for war, saying, you know, that 80% of Americans, 80% of independents, 68% of Republicans who think that this was a wrong decision by Bush to basically continue the cover-up of what was going on out of either his or Cheney's or both's offices. I mean, this was just fine. No problem. And that the majority of Americans are ridiculous. Incredible. Norman Solomon with us. June 21st, Media Foundation, Education Foundation, this was a couple of weeks ago, the Media Education Foundation released a powerful new documentary, War Made Easy, the movie narrated by Sean Penn, based on Norman Solomon's book, War Made Easy, How Presidents and Pundits Keep Spinning Us to Death. Norman, welcome to the program.
Thanks, Tom.
Some incredible spin going on here. I want to talk about war. First, I'd like to just get your take on this whole thing with Louis Libby.
Well, it's really in the context of we live in a warfare state, and the entire web of lies began because a war was being pushed on the country fundamentally based on deception. You talk about William Crystal, who is on TV, the more factually wrong he is, the more he is on the networks. He said the war would be a piece of cake, that there were definitely weapons of mass destruction. So, hey, he's really qualified to explain the world to us now, since his track record is so sterling. And that is typical. You know, those of us who have challenged this war from before it began, those few journalists who raise their voices, they were attacked as being biased. You know, if you are pro-war, that is objective, according to the news media. If you are anti-war, you're too biased to be believed.
Yeah, it's truly bizarre. But also we have to keep in mind that, for example, NBC, owned by General Electric, one of the largest defense contractors in the country.
Well, that's right. Every time a cruise missile slammed into Baghdad, the people who were at that time cutting the paycheck for Tom Brokaw, they literally had the cash registers ringing.
Yeah. Yeah, and your this new movie based on your book, War Made Easy, this documentary, one of the points that is in the press release, it says this is a 50-year history of lying us into wars. I would submit to you, Norman Solomon, that this really goes back before that. You've got the Spanish-American War, where there was clear collusion between McKinley and William Randolph Hearst to get us into the Spanish-American War. And, you know, the whole, remember, the main thing was fabricated. World War One, the father of modern public relations came along, you know, Freud's nephew, and helped Woodrow Wilson sell this thing. Americans didn't want to get into World War One. I, to this day, frankly, don't know why we got into World War One.
Well, you know, John Reed, the great journalist from Portland, Oregon, called it the Traitors' War. Those who wanted to make a killing through multi-million dollar profits, they pushed us into World War One. And you're quite right. You know, you go back to the last part of the 19th century, it was spin, it was lies, and for most of us who are now alive, in our lifetimes, our wave of spin that we lived through in real time began with the Vietnam War, and here we are, 5 decades later, and what Senator William Fulbright called the arrogance of power, it is on display every day out of the White House and really out of most of the network TV studios.
Yeah, but I'd say since the Civil War, this covers much of American history. And Edward Bernays, during World War II, or World War One rather, prior to World War One, really amped it up. I mean, he invented the modern PR industry, and it was, you know, promoted by Woodrow Wilson to help bring about World War One. So why do we allow this to continue even after we've had that old war horse Dwight Eisenhower? I mean, a guy who'd actually seen the horrors of arguably a justifiable war. I mean, you know, one of the few, actually, World War II, come out and warn us explicitly about the military-industrial congressional complex.
Well, one of the phrases in that speech, his farewell address, that doesn't get that much attention is he also warned about technological elites who would guide, if we let them, U.S. foreign policy. And I think we're seeing that. You know, you alluded to General Electric owning NBC and being also a huge military contractor. And there are enormous profits, of course, being made in this high-tech war that's being waged in Iraq and Afghanistan, close to $2 billion a day of our tax money going to the military. And you notice I say military, not authentic defense. One of the stunning things to me about this film, and I'm a print and radio guy, not a filmmaker, but the Media Education Foundation reached down into the Orwellian memory hole and pulled out footage that is so stunning in part because it explodes the myths about the tough media who warned us about the Vietnam War, were tough about the coverage. There's footage in there of 1965 of Walter Cronkite in Vietnam, who sounded pretty much like Bill O'Reilly in that style. And we have been acculturated to that. We are now in a spin cycle, both to support this war continuing in Iraq and to lay the basis for agenda for an attack on Iran, and we're seeing that in the news today as well.
It really took Walter Cronkite quite a while to come around, didn't it?
Yeah, it wasn't until early 68. And the sad part, and the film really talks about this in detail, is that when the news media tend to come around, it's not for the moral reasons. It's not really because the war was based on deception. It's because the war evidently can't be won. And unfortunately, when we take that argument and say, hey, this war has to end because we can't win it, then usually the response is, oh, yeah? Well, we'll show you we can win it. We'll just stay the course. We won't cut and run, and the next war will be even better.
Right, yeah, and there always is a next war. How do we break this cycle, Norman Solomon? What do we do about this?
Well, I think first we have to, the academics would say deconstruct, but I think we could say we just have to expose the huge holes in the arguments for war. Every stage of these wars of the last several decades have relied on similar techniques, relying on a jingoism, illogic, what Orwell described as newspeak. And when we can recognize that, when, for instance, we can say, hey, when we're told, the New York Times today talks about how Iran is culpable for what's going on in Iraq because of helping to kill a few GIs, as though it's the U.S. government prerogative to slaughter people in Iraq, and we don't want anybody else horning in on that business. If we can expose that doublespeak, then we can begin to make it less effective for these war spinners to do their work.
We're talking with Norman Solomon. His new book has been made into a movie, War Made Easy. The website is warmadeeasythemovie.org. And, Norman, the movie is available for people to show to their friends, their town hall, their that sort of thing?
That's right. It's very grassroots. You know, on that site is already about 40 different showings around the country. People are showing the film in schools, union halls, living rooms, theaters, public libraries. And we're really doing an end run around the military-industrial complex. You ain't going to see it on the networks, but it is being seen around the country because people are getting the DVD, taking the initiative, showing it themselves, and this is the key part, using it as a tool to organize against this war and prevent the next one.
Right. War Made Easy, themovie.org, the website. Norman Solomon, how do we, here we have, you know, Scooter Libby just being pardoned because he was part of one of these campaigns to sell us into a war. You've got enormous profits being made by some of the largest global corporations out there, many of them based in the United States, but many of them just, you know, I mean, GE, for example, did more than 50% of its business last year outside the United States. I don't think you could even call it an American corporation anymore. Yet it owns NBC. And you've got some very, very large corporations that profit enormously from this. And you have politicians. I mean, James Madison pointed out that the big danger of war is that it strengthens the executive branch. And he saw that as a danger to democracy. He said no democracy can survive in the face of continuous warfare, you know, continuous war. I keep coming back to this question: how do we break this cycle? And is the only answer just waking people up, or is there some sort of, you know, like public financing of elections? It seems to me would be a really important thing to get the money out, because so much of this defense industry money is ending up back in our political system.
Well, yeah, I mean, to break the cycle, we have to end the situation where the military contractors, the media, and the politicians on both ends of Pennsylvania Avenue are feeding from the same trough, the big corporate money, part of really the warfare state, which we have now for 5 years lived in an extreme version of. I mean, George W. Bush is the worst, but he didn't invent this stuff. He's part of this entire process, and it is something, again, that Senator Fulbright during the Vietnam War ended up, although he supported the war at the beginning, ended up calling it the arrogance of power. So when you pick up the New York Times today and you read in a major story that Scooter Libby was pardoned because President Bush figures, quote, he might as well do what he wants, unquote, with a year and a half left to go. This is a dangerous situation. We have to challenge it.
Yeah, indeed. And we have to wake people up to it. Norman Solomon, the book War Made Easy, the new film, warmadeeasythemovie.org. You can check it out. Executive Director of the Institute for Public Accuracy. Norman, thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Tom.
Always good talking with you. 16 minutes past the hour on the Tom Hartman Program.
Exposing the con in conservative, this is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio.
Now back to the Tom Hartman Program on AirAmericaRadio.com.
Hey! Hey! Up every morning just to keep a job. I gotta fight my way through the bustling mob. Sounds of the city pounding in my brain while another day goes down the drain.
Minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number. Steve in Chicago, Illinois. Hey, Steve, welcome to the program.
Hi, Tom. I want to combine two issues that have been talked about. One is that, you know, if telling the truth means crossing or contradicting the administration, people in the CIA or probably other branches protecting us know that they're potential targets.
Right.
It's also been heavily discussed on talk shows that, you know, what's going to wake the people up, or people have made a decision in the election of 06 and yada, yada, yada. I'm in a situation where I am, and this is combining the two, my daughter has a chronic medical condition that requires us to have a government-aided medical plan for her. Otherwise, she can't get insurance, and she'll be crippled. And that's the bottom line. Mm-hmm. I'm afraid that I've actually picked up the phone and called my congressman, and then I hung up. I'm afraid if I call them that I'm going to end up on some list, and somehow, some way, I'm going to get a letter saying that this coverage is canceled. And to me, that's a form of terrorism. But, you know, sure, the people in the CIA are, you know, have to be worried about this, but so do common everyday citizens like me. And I am disgusted that I have to be this way, especially after hearing your great explanation of what our forefathers went through just to put together the Declaration of Independence. I look at them, Steve, and I compare them to what I'm going through, and I have so much more respect for them.
Yeah, well, Steve, yes, it's a tragedy that we all live in a country where we just kind of are starting to assume every telephone conversation is tapped, any communication with the government is going to end up being used against us, number one. Number two, even more horrifying, and I strongly recommend you go see Michael Moore's movie Sicko, which we saw last Friday. It was just astounding. Well, even more horrifying is the fact that we live in a country where your daughter has a health condition and you have to worry about making sure that you've got to jump through hoops to get it covered, you know, instead of just it automatically being covered, because health care is a right, not a privilege. We're the only industrialized country in the world that considers health care to be a privilege and not a right. And then that's a horrible thing. So Steve, thank you for your point. It's well made. And I wish you and your daughter very well. But boy, we need to wake up in this country. I mean, there's so many issues. Nancy Toby is with us on the line. She's with democracyfornewhampshire.com, one of the many Democracy for America groups. She's the co-founder of Democracy for New Hampshire and the legislative coordinator for the National Defense Alliance. Nancy, welcome to the program.
Hi, thank you.
The Rush Holtz bill is being championed by some as the be-all and end-all solution to electronic voting machine fraud being perpetrated on the people of the United States. My take is that it actually is going to legitimize electronic voting machines, and that we never should have privatized our elections in the first place. And this is just this and Dianne Feinstein's bill as well. Either one of them are just going to make this all the more real, all the more, you know, all the harder to disentangle ourselves from. In your opinion, am I close to what's going on here?
Yeah, I think you are. I think I know I only have a few minutes to talk about this very complex subject, but, you know, I've been researching this bill for almost 3 years now, and for a long time most of the activist community was 100% behind it, even last year when I met you in D.C. and asked you to talk about it. Most people were behind it, but they have come to really realize that the bill is not just problematic, but it is dangerous. And so I think I've been, you know, successful communicating the flaws of the bill, but the danger is I have not been as successful in communicating. And I point that out because we respond differently to problems than we do to danger.
So what's the danger?
Well, the danger is, as you correctly stated, it codifies secret vote counting. It cements control of that secret vote counting to the executive branch, directly to the White House. It sets the scene for unlimited litigation on election challenges, and we know from Florida 2000 what happens when we let our courts decide our elections. It's got a lot of big ticket items that are totally unfunded. For New Hampshire alone, we've estimated it will cost our taxpayers $3 million a year for the next 20 years, and it won't provide relief for 2008. So, you know,
it also, but it also, and thus the all the urgency around it is meaningless. But it also does it not establishes as basically a fact of life that the privatization of our vote, the voting machines from private corporations, is an okay thing. In fact, is now perfectly legal.
Well, this is only one thing that does that in the federal government. The other thing that is perpetuating that very dangerous situation is this federal agency that reports to the White House, the Election Assistance Commission.
Yeah, right, the election. DemocracyForAmerica.com is the website for more information. 27 minutes past the hour.
The Tom Hartman Program. Call Tom at 866-303-2270. This is Air America Radio.
Minutes past the hour. See, we really have to do something. Rush Holt's bill is not the solution. Dianne Feinstein's is even worse. What we really need is a piece of legislation that says that the vote shall not be privatized. A law that you know, in one sentence it could be done. The vote shall not be privatized. No private corporation shall be involved in any way in maintaining voting rolls, in assembling voting rolls, in providing states with information about voters, in controlling or holding or selecting voter information, in collecting votes, tabulating votes, summarizing votes, or telling voters how they voted. This is pretty straightforward stuff. Just the vote shall not be privatized. Now, there's a long list that we could add to that. Our schools shall not be privatized. The army shall not be privatized. The DMV shall not be privatized. I mean, there's a bunch of things. No, I'm serious. There are in some states they're actually talking about privatizing even the Department of Motor Vehicles. They want to privatize everything. And they say, well, you wouldn't want government controlling. Well, you wouldn't want the government that runs the post office also, you know, fill in the blank. Well, my question to them is, do you want the government that runs the post office also running criminal executions? I suppose you could make that an argument against the death penalty, but I don't want our criminal justice system privatized. I mean, why would it be that putting the profit motive as the number one motive for doing anything in the context of taking care of the commons would be a good thing? There is just absolutely no reasonable and rational basis for that, other than that somebody wants to get rich off all the rest of us, and that somebody is somehow connected by family, by relationship, or by check writing to a member of Congress. I mean, that's what it breaks down to. 1-866-303-2270, our telephone number, TomHartman.com, AirAmerica.com, our websites. Kyle in San Rafael, California. Hey, Kyle.
Hi. As far as I know, Tom, you're the only person in the media talking about Article 2, Section 2, which and it bears repeating, that the president shall have power to grant reprieves and pardons for offenses against the United States, except in cases of impeachment. And that, I think, now is our last redress, our last recourse to save this country. If you can't pardon or reprieve somebody who's under impeachment, I'd say not only Cheney with Kucinich's bill should be impeached, but I'd look at impeaching Gonzalez and Karl Rove. They're civil officials. So at this
I'm point, not sure that Rove – I don't think Rove required congressional – I don't think that the Senate had to confirm him, and therefore I'm not sure he's impeachable.
Well,
I may be wrong on that.
Let's go to Section 2, Article 4. All civil offices of the United States. Isn't Rove a civil officer of the United States?
Well, my understanding, again, I'm not a constitutional attorney, but my understanding is that what that refers to is anybody who has to be confirmed by the Senate. That's what makes you an officer, is or that's one of the hallmarks of it. That you
all
can't
right, well,
you can't impeach
I'll
your county clerk, even though the you know, or you can't impeach your local you know, somebody who works for the federal government, you know, your local postmaster, well, even postmaster, I don't know, but you know, so your local mailman, you can't impeach them. It has
okay,
to be
well,
somebody.
Abeyance for a minute, but
yeah. But what about Bush?
Well, Bush comes next. But nobody in their right mind in this country, especially after reading the four-part Washington Post articles, is going to want to impeach Bush if there's a chance of Cheney actually becoming president. That's insane.
Right.
So then the next thing that I think is important to talk about here is the single person who is the biggest roadblock to impeachment, and that's Nancy Pelosi. Everybody here needs to call Nancy Pelosi's office in the next few hours here before they shut down today. And you can find that information, where the phone number is, very easily by going to cspan.org. Over on the right column, there's a congressional directory. So all of this information is very easily found. Of course, you also, as Joseph Wilson said, the heat needs to be put on to your local congressman or congresswoman, and also... I don't know if you're aware of this and have talked about this, although I haven't heard it in the last 2 hours, but therawstory.com has posted the White House internal phone numbers, and anybody can go to the Raw Story and get that link. It's right there on their front page, and you can call to inside the White House and avoid the whole White House switchboard thing. So
the switchboard is closed. The main phone number for Congress, by the way, just if anybody has, you know, grab a pencil right now and I'll give out this number. This is the congressional switchboard, and you can simply ask for the office of any member of Congress, you know, whether it be Nancy Pelosi or anybody else, and that's 202-225-3121. 202-225-3121.
You know, when Ellen Ratner, on a day when Ellen Ratner, who I think of as a pretty level-headed person, not given to wild displays of emotion, on a day when she's come out for impeachment, I think that the outcry has got to build. We need to, I mean, what's happened here, Tom, is nothing less than the functional equivalent of the Saturday Night Massacre when Nixon fired Cox.
Yeah, and I agree.
If we don't get that now, it's over. It's really... firmly
well,
over.
I'm not sure it's over, but let's push to get it now. I mean, you know, let's never say it's over, but let's push to get it now. Kyle, good point and well made. Thank you very much. I do appreciate it. 1-866-303-2270. Dan in San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, Dan.
Yeah, backtracking a little to where the discussion about lying us into war. And
yeah.
I have a comparison between the Spanish-American War and the war in Iraq, and it's
sure.
somewhat tongue in cheek, but. One war was yellow journalism, the other was yellow cake, and then one Herseth Remington, you provide the pictures, I'll provide the war. And the other, Bush said to Blair, you provide the intelligence, I'll provide the war.
Yeah,
see, that's the difference.
Yeah,
that.
there are some parallels. And you know, we were lied into the Spanish-American War. You know, the USS Maine, the boiler blew up. Was it in the Philippines or was it off the coast of Puerto Rico?
No, it was in Havana Harbor.
You're right, Havana Harbor.
Yeah.
And the boiler blew up, and McKinley said, or whoever was Whoever, who was it McKinley president at the time of the Spanish? I'm going to have to go back and look at my history of the Spanish.
Yeah, I don't recall.
But in any case, it was promoted as you know, the USS Maine was under attack. The cry was "Remember the Maine," and you know, we relied into that war, and we were in the Philippines fighting the Spanish-American War for over 40 years. Arguably, we still are fighting the Spanish-American War in the out islands of the Philippines, where we're now fighting a Muslim insurgency, which is, I would say, the echo, the remnant of the Spanish-American War. So
yeah, I mean, everything that's happening as far as like insurgencies, I mean, they all go back to our policies or somebody else's in the West's policy to a great degree.
Yeah, good point. Dan, thank you very much, and thanks for the call and for making that. Glenda in Diamond Bar, California. Hey, Glenda.
Oh, hello. Hi, Tom. I really enjoy your show, the historical background and the analysis that you provide. And by the way, Norman Solomon's movie, War Made Easy, everyone should see that. It is really fantastic and gives people an idea of what's been going on and what is going on now. I have to say, as far as the Scooter Liberty case is concerned, the Congress has only one choice at this point, and that is impeachment. They already have enough information. They've got the Downing Street memos. They've got the FISA violation. They've got the testimony of James Comey, which should have led to the immediate impeachment of Gonzo Boy. If they follow the court route, they will only be slung into the briar patch of the Bush-packed fascist courts. And we've already seen what decisions that they're handing down. They'll be tied up in court. It'll be on appeal until long after Bush leaves office. They must go for impeachment now. I'm urging everybody to contact their Congress people and their local offices next week in D.C. and demand impeachment now. If the shoe were on the other foot.
At the very least, sign on with Dennis Kucinich's House Resolution 333 to impeach Cheney. It's a great starting point. I agree. Mark in Joplin, Missouri. Hey, Mark.
Just as an update, I just want to say that in Missouri, all the driver's license bureau offices are privately owned contractors now.
You're kidding. They privatized the DMV in Missouri.
Yeah.
Amazing.
All the satellite offices are owned by private contractors.
So somebody's making a profit every time you get a driver's license.
Absolutely. And there's a state association now of driver's license bureau owners. So they've got a lobby.
Yeah. Yeah,
but I just want to say that the response that I've heard both in mainstream media, on the Washington Journal, on C-SPAN this morning, and the WorldNet Daily individual that you had earlier, that exact information and the exact talking points have been repeated everywhere, and it's a test and a testament, and I think the Bush administration will just continue because of the size and quantity and quality of their propaganda machine that the corporate media, you know, mainstream corporate media, conservative-leaning media, you know, has on a stranglehold in this country. And by this coming weekend with the Talking Head shows, they will have, they're going to have both sides. I know that that's what they'll, you know, put it forward.
They'll call it both sides. What you'll have is you will not have an impeachment side. There will not be the side that actually is concerned about the future of this country. You will not have, I guarantee you, on the weekend shows or any of the news shows between now and then, other than possibly Keith Olbermann, who's, you know, arguably one of the best journalists on television.
Well, they're
you will not have somebody on there talking about what happened with Brewster Jennings. You will not have somebody talking, as Larry Johnson was in the first hour of our program today, about how CIA agents probably died as a result of this. That you're not going to have.
Both sides will not include the facts.
Yeah, there you go. Well said. Thank you very much. It's excellent
report.
Thanks, Mark. Thanks a lot, Mark. Good talking to you. 45 minutes past the hour here on the Tom Hartman program on Air America Radio.
Hartman Program, Viagra for your brain, on Air America Radio. Call 866-303-2270.
Yeah, you really got me now. You got me so I can't sleep at night.
This is Bush's song about Libby. Congratulations, by the way. Blogging over at airamerica.com/Tom Hartman page. The in David Poole's favorite contribution to our blog today, came from Jeffinator. Congratulations, Jeffinator. Jeffinator's blog, The Last Straw. Why is the commutation of Libby's sentence the last straw? That's what I want to know. Personally, for me, it was when Bush gave his State of the Union after 9/11, publicly praised General Musharraf, the military dictator of Pakistan. But why is this straw the last straw? Why wasn't leaking the name in the first place a last straw? Why aren't thousands of signing statements the last straw? Why hasn't violating the FISA law been the last straw? Why wasn't lying to Congress about Iraq's nuclear program the last straw? Why wasn't declaring U.S. citizens enemy combatants and detaining them indefinitely the last straw? Why wasn't the torture of detainees the last straw? Why wasn't the use of phosphorus as a weapon in a combat zone the last straw? Why wasn't the response to Katrina the last straw? Why weren't the caging lists and election fraud the last straw? The poor camel is buried under a mountain of straws, and nothing's been done to check Bush's depraved leadership of our country. Impeachment must be called for by all of us. Enough is enough. Well done, Jeffinator. You got David going, so it works. Congratulations. We're going to send you a signed copy of my new book, Screwed, The Undeclared War Against the Middle Class and What We Can Do About It. And by the way, the book that we wrote on the air here, the new book, Cracking the Code, the all about the art and science of political persuasion, is you can find it at the top of TomHartman.com. There's a link to it. It's now available over at Amazon for pre-order, and we're hoping a few other bookstores, as they come along, we will get them up. Eve in Centuria, California. Hey, Eve, welcome to the program.
I'm calling from Centuria, Washington.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hi.
That's quite all right. You know, for a long time I've thought about this voting issue, and it struck me that one of the reasons that has enabled it to be rigged so easily is the fact that it's a secret ballot. Now, when this country first started voting, it was an open vote, and everybody got to see who you voted for. They opted to go to a secret ballot only because there were some problems, and I'm assuming it may have been around the Civil War. I don't know for sure. But the fact is,
I think it was during Reconstruction.
Very few of us are secret about who we voted for. We even declare a party. So why not go back to the open ballot? It can be counted as we vote. It's very public. It's transparent. We can have independent counters there as well as government counters. Yeah. There's no way.
I have heard people suggest that, and there's been some discussion of that. Frankly, my recollection is that we went to a secret ballot during Reconstruction, and that part of it was because there were still all these wounds, psychological, political, whatever, psychic wounds left over from the Civil War, and people thought that they shouldn't have to refight the Civil War all over again if they voted for the wrong person. But the idea of open voting or open balloting, or for that matter, even just going to caucusing and things like that, is an interesting one, but it's not going to happen, Eve. I think your point is well made. But
well, I think we ought to push for it because I see that as the only sure fix.
Yeah. Well, you may well be right. But it's not going to happen. Jennifer in Berkeley, California. Hey, Jennifer.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm great. What's up?
Nancy Tovey was wonderful, and the woman who was just on, Lynn Landis, is the first person I heard advocate that about the open voting. She's got a website, you can look her up, Landis Report or something like that. And what you were saying about having the vote not privatized, I agree that's the most important thing, and there is a bill that says that. It doesn't say it directly, but it is the Kucinich bill, it doesn't say hand count, but it demands hand counting paper ballots. It's the Paper Ballot Act of 2006. So you can also look it up at the, you know, government website for the Congress. And because it says that, that all federal elections must be on paper ballots that are hand counted by civil servants, that means it can't be privatized. That excludes anything but the government being in control of it, anything but we the people being in control of it.
This is a piece of legislation that Dennis Kucinich has advanced, right?
What did you say?
Didn't Dennis Kucinich put this forward?
Oh, yes. Kucinich put it forward in 2006. It's funny.
Any idea how many sponsors are attached to that right now?
That one had 19 co-sponsors, including our own Barbara Lee here in Berkeley and Oakland, back in 2006, but he hasn't resubmitted it. And so, you know, he needs, and I've written him and I've written Barbara Lee, and someone needs to resubmit that bill, because I agree we have to defeat the Holt bill. It was a good, you know, idea, and their hearts were in the right place, but it just entrenches the voting machine industry, privatization and computerization. and in voting at all, and that it's just like Michael Moore says about the health care industry. The insurance companies, the middleman, has to be taken out. The privatization has just got to be abolished. You can't keep passing stuff to try to restrict it. It's just got to be gone. So the paper ballot act just has to be resubmitted.
Okay, good suggestion. And hopefully a wise member of Congress will do so, and if not, we need to hassle them to do it. David and San Mateo, about a half a minute here, David, before we've got to wrap up the show.
Well, then I'll be very brief, Tom. The 16 words from Bush's State of the Union. I have another group of 16 words for you and your audience. This is from The Rights of Man by Thomas Paine. A body of men holding themselves accountable to nobody ought not to be trusted by anybody.
Yeah, well said. And therefore, you wanted to reference that somehow to Nancy Pelosi's statement on Libby?
Well, she said that the president is condoning criminal conduct. Isn't she obligated then to pursue impeachment?
Yeah, I would think that if the president is condoning criminal conduct, that he should be held to account for it. Yeah. David, thank you very much. You know, well said. Coming up tomorrow, we will be live on the 4th of July. Senator and presidential candidate Mike Gravel will be here taking your calls. We've said to any presidential candidate, if you're willing to take our listeners' calls, you can come on the air. Jim Girard is here on his new book, Beam Me Up, Jesus, A Heathen's Guide to the Rapture. Susan Lerner from the California Clean Money Campaign. And as always, the rest of the news. Don't forget, my friends, democracy begins with you. Tag, you're it. We'll see you tomorrow, live on the 4th of July.
This is the Tom Hartman Program on Air America Radio. For exclusive Tom Hartman archives and more information, visit us online at airamericaradio.com.